being skeptical is a good thing when it comes to the paranormal. Just believing everything and anything that comes your way that could possibly be unexplained is not usually the best way to handle investigating or reviewing a case, because quite often things can be explained. Sometimes the desire for something to be paranormal or ghostly, especially with someone seeking it out, can oftentimes outweigh the desire to simply find an answer, whatever that answer may be, which may simply be, as I quite often say, a cat in the wall. But sometimes it can be that. Sometimes it is not that. But again, skeptical is good. Asking questions is good. And accepting the answer, once that research is done, is also good. Not always is the answer, though, a cat in the wall. Sometimes an answer is unexplainable, at least to a logical explanation. If the answer is it's a ghost, that may need to be a little more accepted as an explanation. In today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, we hear several ghost stories, several that some folks think they have an explanation for. Right off the bat, as they dig deeper, it turns out, maybe not. We'll hear a story and wonder, what does it take to prove that a haunting is real? To one skeptic. Also, a grandmother's visions. She's telling her granddaughter about things that she's seeing out the window. And yes, she is suffering with dementia. But not everything when you're suffering from dementia is dementia. It turns out some of those things she's seeing may be more than just that. Also, a murdered teen haunts the home that she died in, seeking help from the living. Some great ghost stories for you today. Well, from Real Ghost Stories Online, this is EPP bonus episode number 260. My name is Tony Bruschi. Stay with us. If you've ever had a loved one in any sort of nursing care, especially towards the end in a hospice-type situation, you may have encountered a situation where that loved one is sharing stories of things around them that may not be there, at least not to us. We're not able to see or experience, but are very real to them. Now, I'm not saying that in many of these cases, this is simply a mind that is getting older and is deteriorating and maybe producing these thoughts and these visions and is essentially in a dementia state. That is factual. That does exist. Not every time that this happens is it something paranormal. However, when you can connect some dots sometimes and you do the research, you may be startled on what you come across, just dismissing it as always being, oh, it's the dementia talking, may not be the most accurate way of dealing with a situation such as that. That's what one of our listeners found out as they were visiting their grandmother, and she was talking about the children playing outside of her window. What she discovers about what once went on outside of her window makes more sense than not. Take a listen. This is a nonfiction research narrative that I wrote for my MFA program at George Mason University. It's a shortened version of a much longer piece. I hope it flows well enough for you to get the full picture. I hope you enjoy. When I arrived at the nursing home to visit my grandma, she didn't greet me with her normal cheerful voice. Grandma, what's the matter?
Nothing.
Why do you look like you've been crying? I was frustrated that she didn't want to tell me. I plopped in a green and mauve flower-patterned armchair next to the window and waited patiently for her to answer. I felt my skin sticking to the arm of the chair, and I thought about the chair's cleanliness. I wondered how many other visitors had sat in this chair over the years. Was the arm sticky because of the dead skin cells it had collected from all the people who ever sat there year after year? Then I wondered if any elderly patients had accidents while sitting there. Surely the home would get rid of furniture that had been soiled, right? I always had these thoughts when I came to visit. Most times I'd sit on her bed in my mind. I assumed the bedding was changed out each day, maybe multiple times a day, and it made me feel that it was somewhat cleaner. Grandma sat across from me, slumped in a black leather and metal wheelchair. She was wearing her usual lavender sweatsuit with knee-high white athletic socks and her thick, soiled white therapy sneakers. What was different about her appearance is that her lips were dry and wrinkled, not painted or moisturized by her signature bright and creamy pink lipstick. Her gray and white hair was also disheveled and looked like a used cotton ball, which was unusual for her because she had been a beautician for over 30 years and always cared about the appearance of her hair. "Well, I was trying to take a nap, but the little boy was just so mean to me," she said. My grandma's room at the nursing home was on the first floor. And after nurses gave her a bath, changed her bedpans, and dressed her, they often pushed her wheelchair close to her bedroom window, where she liked to nap, especially on sunny days. She told me that before I arrived, she saw children outside her window playing in the field. The children talked to her through the AC window unit and asked her to play with them. A paved parking lot was outside of my grandma's window. I could see my parked car. Grandma had been saying things for a few months that didn't make sense, and I was okay with that. She was in her late 80s and had been sick with diabetes for a long time and congestive heart failure for a few years. Maybe now she was getting dementia, too. Although the field and the children were just her vision, the pain she felt was visible to me. So I continued the conversation to try and comfort her. "Can you tell me more about the boy and the other kids?" "They're all nice kids," she said, "except for that little boy. He's so mean to me. He teases me and says horrible things."
"Like what?"
"Just horrible things." She said his words were so bad that she would never repeat what he said.
"Okay, Grandma, I understand."
There was a long pause of silence between us, so I changed the topic. I hoped that if I started talking about my daughter, Taylor, her 2-year-old great-grandmother, that it would cheer her up. We had a few good laughs about Taylor, but I sensed that she was still upset and distracted by what she thought had happened with the little boy. She had talked about the children outside her window before as well as Alex Trebek talking to her through the television, and a few times I caught her talking to her children when I walked into the room, but I'd never seen her so upset about one of those experiences. I felt helpless and sad to see her in that way, especially knowing I was going to have to leave her alone again. If I could stay, and if my grandma told me that the little boy came back, I would play along and yell at him to go away through the AC window unit and leave my grandma alone. Or else, I'd tell his mom. I'd do anything to make her feel happy and safe. I hated to leave, but I had to get back to my daughter. I said goodbye and slowly walked backwards out of her room and into the hallway, waving goodbye the whole time. Any other time, I would have just have left her room, walked down the hallway, and drove away in my car without looking back. This time, though, I waited in the hallway a few seconds and peeked back into her room. I wish I hadn't done that. She didn't see me, but her chin was tilted to her chest, and she looked sad and worried. The sight of that nearly ripped my heart straight from my chest. Real or not, I cursed that boy all the way to my car, and before getting in, I turned and verbally threatened the empty space in the parking lot between me and my grandma's window. "You better leave my grandma alone, little boy." My grandma's nursing home was near where she had lived in the suburbs of Philadelphia for more than 50 years. Her move into the nursing home coincided with my family's move from the same Philly suburbs to 2 hours south in Northern Virginia for my husband's work. The drive to the nursing home was not long, but Taylor started preschool and became involved in weekend activities that limited the convenience of our schedules to visit my family in Pennsylvania. When I found time for a break, I would make a point of driving to Pennsylvania to visit my dad and mom, grandparents, and other family. Any time I had with my grandma was precious to me, and anything other than comforting her at this moment would have left me feeling heartless. My mom and aunt made the decision to place my grandma in the nursing home when caring for her became unmanageable.
Complications from arthritis, diabetes, and congestive heart failure made it difficult for my grandma to accomplish everyday routines like getting out of bed, feeding herself, or even answering a phone call. Although she enjoyed the company of the nurses, physical therapists, and her roommates at the nursing home, my grandma wanted to be at her home. In her red brick Cape Cod with a blue carpet, peach kitchen, purple bathroom, and pink bedroom, even if it meant she'd be alone. Her husband, my grandpa, had been dead 17 years before her living in the nursing home, and her daughters had moved out decades before that. After my visit, I couldn't shake the nostalgic feeling and a growing curiosity. Fearing criticism or disbelief about what medical conditions might have caused her to have this vision, I didn't tell anyone about what happened. I wasn't sure if I believed her, but I was compelled by how upset she was and the image of her when I left, slumped in that wheelchair, sad and worried. To write a list of details about her story of the boy, I wanted to record the details so I wouldn't forget them, and because I was curious to somehow research her story. I started my research without expectations, and when I looked for connections between the nursing home and any accounts of children, what I found made me believe that I might not be leaving her alone when I'm gone. On January 24th, 1882, 23 orphan children burned to death in the Great Fire of the Philadelphia Orphan Asylum in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Based on eyewitness accounts and investigative reports, the local authorities declared that the fire was a result of the flawed structure that surrounded the boiler. Approximately 100 orphans lived in the asylum at the time of the fire. 70 orphans were immediately accounted for, and authorities eventually found 7 orphans freezing and alive in the nearby field. They had hoped that the remaining 23 orphans ran to a neighboring house. The reality, however, was that the missing children had burned to death inside of the asylum. After the Great Fire, the surviving orphans relocated several times to orphanage establishments in the suburbs of Philadelphia. At each relocation, the children suffered further loss from various outbreaks, including scarlet fever, until finally the suffering orphans were last uprooted to another nursing home. A nursing home that would have its name changed to the name where my grandma resided today. It was February of 2010, and because life got in the way, I didn't get a chance to talk to my grandma about my research before the nurses at the home called to tell my family that my grandmother had passed away in her sleep. Unlike other funerals I attended, my grandma's body resembled what she looked like in life. The funeral home painted her nails a soft pink and defined her smiling lips with her signature bright pink lipstick. They smoothed her skin with the ivory cover-up, with just a touch of blush to flush her cheeks. They curled her gray bangs downward like a questing wave resting on her forehead. She looked full of life. At her funeral service, I kept composed to read her eulogy I wrote on behalf of her 5 grandchildren, but I might have collapsed to the floor if it weren't for my husband holding me up when I had to leave the room where her body lay in a casket. Like the way I felt many times saying goodbye to her at the nursing home, I hated to leave her alone. 2 years later, in February of 2012, I couldn't shake a nagging feeling that there was still something more to my grandma's story about the kids yelling at her through the AC window unit. I called the nursing home, explained I was conducting research regarding the property grounds, and the operator connected me to the maintenance director at the center, Mark. I told him that I was interested in learning about the history of the building and the property. I was afraid to mention anything about my grandma's visions in connection to what I had discovered about the history of the nursing home. I was afraid he'd refuse my phone calls and that I'd lose any chance of vindicating my grandma's visions. Mark and I made small talk about the way the property used to look. He told me that the grounds boasted the biggest pine tree in Pennsylvania, that they had the second biggest oak tree in that area. He said the country back in the day and the fields and trees surrounding the building were beautiful. So there was no parking lot like there is now, I asked. Oh no, he said, that was a field. They made a lot of changes since then, and since your grandma lived here, you probably wouldn't recognize the place. They tore down the pillars and the 2 gatehouses. The gatehouses, I asked. I remember the pillars that Mark referenced, but I didn't remember seeing gatehouses on the property. In fact, I'm not entirely sure I would have known what a gatehouse looked like, even if I saw one. They were really old buildings, he said. This place used to be a home for children, and they lived in the gatehouses. When Mark presented the information about the children, I took a chance and told him the real reason I was calling. And that's where we're going to stop. This is a great story, very compelling, and you're going to be very surprised by the outcome. So if you want to hear it, become an extra podcast person, an EPP, a supporter of our program. All you have to do is go to ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com and sign up to be an EPP. Ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. That's the address over there. Same content on both platforms. There you get the bonus episodes of the show, every single one of them, all 260 of them. Hard to believe there's that many. You get a brand new one every single week, access to that, access to our advanced episodes. Those are our regular episodes, but you get them weeks before they come out and commercial free. So if you don't like the ads and all that, boom, subscribe, you get them without the ads. That's a nice bonus as well. Ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories to support the show and get all the extras. Until next time, for Real Ghost Stories Online, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.